Okay, good morning.
Hello.
So I appreciate coming out to hear this year, the second time giving it. It's the first part of the practical halachos of the baking was on HaFresh HaSalah, and at the time was well attended, and we had a lot of questions. It was very good, but for some reason the recording device didn't function properly. So we will learn it again, why not? Okay. So the mitzvah of taking challah, separating a piece of dough off of, again, we'll get into all the particulars, the question number one, is this something which depends on being in Eretz Yisrael or not? Oftentimes these mitzvahs that have to do with separating, we have truma and maaser, all these different separations that take place, usually they're connected to Eretz Yisrael. So here also, is it connected to Eretz Yisrael? Does it depend on being in Eretz Yisrael? So the answer is yes and no. That the mitzvah from the Torah only applies in Eretz Yisrael, it only applies in Israel, but even in Israel, it only takes place on a Torah level, on a biblical level, if it has what's called bias kulcham, which means that a majority of the Jews in the world are living in Eretz Yisrael at that particular time. Not yet there, but it could be based on population shifts and the strength of the Aliyah. It could be in the near future we'll reach that point. But right now we're not there yet. So it's actually a obligation midrabanan, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. So we do have to take challah, but it's only dirabanan. However, there is a difference between the dirabanan that was in Israel and the one that was here. That since it can exist on a Torah level in Eretz Yisrael, therefore the din dirabanan is stricter in Israel than it is here. We'll have certain leniencies, and I'll try to point them out as we're going through, that will only apply to if you're making challah or have to take challah outside of Israel, that would not apply in Eretz Yisrael. So if you're talking to somebody in Israel and they're doing one thing and you're doing something else, it could be that you're both correct, and it just depends on the situation. And so again, the certain one in particular leniency that we have, they don't have. But we'll hopefully get there soon. So from what things does challah have to be separated from? So basically, if one bakes bread, cake, crackers, cookies, anything with flour from any one of the five grains, you have to separate challah. And there's no difference whether the mixture that you've created is a thick dough or if it's a thin, pourable batter. As long as it's a mixture of at least a little bit of water, even if it's other liquids also, but at least there's a little bit of water in it, plus one of the five grains. Again, the five grains generally we assume are wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. Any of those. So if you do make something out of rice is a different category. You would not have the regular din of challah. Then, in these cases, you have to take challah. So again, just important to keep in mind, it's not just from bread. Again, most times we'll see, there are certain criteria that need to be met in order to require separation of challah, which are more difficult to reach when you're baking cookies or cakes. But if you make something like a large babka recipe or something like that, oftentimes you will get to a point where you are obligated the same way as when you take challah from challah, you're going to be obligated. Obviously, it's very confusing because in the pasuk, the word challah doesn't refer to what you're making, it refers to what you're taking off. We refer to challah as the end product. It's like we take challah from the challah. So really it's just kind of, that's fine, that's how we talk. But it can create some confusion sometimes. It's really when the Torah talks about separating challah, it's like the bracha sounds like, lahafresh challah, to separate the challah. What's left isn't challah. We call it challah, which again is fine. But it can sometimes get a little confusing. So it's not just from bread. Cakes, cookies, anything that's going to be baked and that has flour and water. And again, the amounts we'll talk about hopefully a little bit later. Now, what if you have a dough, but it's going to be boiled or it's going to be fried, like a donut or something like that? So in those cases, you would have to take the challah, but you wouldn't make a bracha. Since there's a disagreement amongst the poskim whether you have to take challah or not. So the compromise that we come to is we separate the challah, but we don't make a bracha. However, if it's a batter, like blintzes or something like that. So it's a batter that's going to be boiled or going to be fried, then you wouldn't even have to take the challah at all. So again, if it's a dough which is not going to be baked, so then you have to take it off without a bracha. If it's a batter or something which is pourable, which is not going to be baked, it's going to be fried or boiled, then you don't have to take challah at all. That's again one important distinction. Again, even if there's a combination of grains, as long as what we're talking about is from the five grains, then it's going to be obligated to take challah. Okay, can one taste the dough before the challah is taken? So here is going to be the most fundamental distinction between baking in Israel and baking here. In Eretz Yisrael, you are not allowed to eat from it, you're not allowed to taste it, you can't do anything. Once it's in dough form, you're now obligated to take the challah, and then until it's separated, you're not allowed to eat from the mixture. In Chutz La'aretz, here, Tinek, you can taste your dough, you can taste your batter if you're making a cake, whatever it is, as long as you take the challah later, but you can taste it even before the challah is taken. And that's going to be an important difference in the following case. What happens if you're sitting Friday night at the table, about to wash and have the challahs, and you realize, oh no, I forgot to take off challah. I wasn't mafresh challah. I baked it and I meant to take it off, and somehow it slipped my mind. I didn't take it. So what can you do? So the problem is that midrabanan, you're not allowed to separate challah on Shabbos, because it looks like you're fixing something. You're taking something which can't be eaten. You're making it now that it can be eaten. So you're not allowed to separate it on Shabbos. So again, one possibility is find different challahs. Let's say there are no other challahs available. So here, if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, you're stuck, because you can't eat it before the challah is taken, and you can't take it on Shabbos. So you have no solution. You have to, I don't know, go find a neighbor or go find something else. You can't eat these challahs. But if you're in Chutz La'aretz, so then since you're allowed to eat from it and separate afterwards, so as long as you leave aside a piece, now you can't designate that piece as the challah on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to take challah on Shabbos, but as long as you leave aside a piece that's not going to be eaten, then after Shabbos, you can say, Harezu challah, this piece is the challah, and retroactively, everything is going to be okay. So again, it's a very important, first it's important halacha to know, but it's a very important distinction, because this halacha is only true in Chutz La'aretz, it's not going to be true in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So when should the challah be taken? You have your flour, and it's going to be the requisite amount, which we'll talk about how much that is later. You have the amount of flour. So can I right away? I'll just take off a bunch of flour before I even mix the water in. Can I do it at that point? So that's too early. You're not allowed to take challah until you have a dough. It has to be that the flour and the water have been mixed together to create the dough. Once that happens, then you can take the challah. But that only works if you're making a dough. If you're making a batter, so what are you going to do? You just stick your hands into the cake batter. That's what the kids do, but it doesn't help for being mafresh challah. So there the halacha is that you're only allowed to take it after it's baked. You're not allowed to take it before. In the same way that the flour stage, flour alone is too early to take challah from a dough. It's not yet reached the point at which you can separate it. The same thing is true when it comes to, or a similar thing is true when it comes to the cake. That the cake, at the point of being batter, is also considered to be too early, because practically there's no way that you can separate. So you'd have to take off from a batter after the cake has been, so you have, I think brownies are a batter, I'm pretty sure. So if you have your brownies, you'd have to cut off, and again, you have to make probably a lot of brownies also, or a very high flour content. But if you have enough of the, you're making it, for a shopman, that's for, 200 people, so then you might have enough between everything that you're baking. You'd have to take it off after it's baked, not before. How should the challah be taken? So here's where there are a lot of differences. So the simplest method of separating challah is as follows. So first of all, it should be taken and the bracha should be said while standing. It's a birkas ha-mitzvah, it's a bracha that we make on a mitzvah. In general, again, barring any other factor, we stand whenever we're doing a mitzvah out of covered mitzvah. We always stand up for, you know, tzkiyah shofar and shul. We stand up for the bracha and the megillah. If we're doing we shake lulav and esrog, generally when we're making a bracha and a mitzvah out of respect, out of cover for the mitzvah, we stand up. So the same thing would be true here as well. When you're going to be separating and going to be making the bracha, you should be standing. Again, if you did it while sitting, it still works. But again, just in terms of the ideal way to be doing it should be said while standing. Okay? Good. So then what do you do? So you have your dough in front of you. So the way that the simplest way to do it is that you separate off a piece of the dough. So you can, we'll say for now, stick your hand, and we'll talk about it. There might be a problem with that a little bit later. You know, stick your hand into the dough, you take off a piece of the dough. The Ramah says that you should take about the size of an olive. Which again is no bigger. Again, we assume that our olives are a little bit maybe smaller than their olives were, because I use it a little bit different. Something between the size of an olive and an egg. And you shouldn't take off more than that, because nowadays we don't eat it. In the time when we're supposed to be doing the challah is giving it to a kohen. We don't give it to the kohanim nowadays. The kohanim are tameh, it's tameh. We don't give it to the kohen. So if we were giving it to the Kohen, so then we would say to take off a very generous portion, because this is a present you're supposed to be giving to the Kohen. This is where they get their sustenance from, the different matnos kahuna. But since it's going to be going to waste anyway, so there's no point in wasting a lot. You have to do it because that's the mitzvah. But the mitzvah really is to take off a small amount. So there's no reason to, you know, try to be machmir and take off this huge piece. Oh, you know, I'm taking off a really big piece of chal. No. Ramah says you should take off what the minhag is. The minhag is, again, this little round piece. But more than that, you shouldn't take off, because it's just going to be going to waste. You've taken off the piece of chal and you're holding it in your hand, then you say the bracha. Right? The bracha is Asher Gashon V'Sof V'Sivayin L'Hafrish Chalah, to separate chal. And some add the words minha isa. You're separating the chalah from minha isa, from the dough. If that's your minhag good, if it's not your minhag not, whatever it is, whatever. Seems to me most people do whatever the cookbook says, which we'll get back to shortly. But then you make the bracha. Once you've separated off the piece of challah, you're holding it in your hand. Now you've made the bracha. So then you say harezu challah. You declare that this piece is challah. It can be said in English if you want. It doesn't really matter. The point, the truth is, technically it can even be done just by thinking it. But the minhag is to say it. You declare this piece is challah. Now, there are some differences here. The way I described it, again, is you take off the piece of challah first, then you make the bracha, and then you say harezu challah. Others say that you should first make the bracha, then you should separate the piece, and then say harezu challah. Right? It's a question of whether you make the, do you separate, the, is the bracha being said before you separate the piece from the dough, or after it's already been separated and in your hand? So if one has the minhag to do that, so that it's fine. What the question really boils down to is that we usually make brachos before we do the mitzvah. So what's the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah taking off the piece of challah from the dough? Or is the mitzvah saying that the piece of challah I took off the dough is challah? The simple understanding is that the mitzvah is not the actual taking it off, but it's taking it off for the purpose of making it challah and declaring that this is challah. So if you would make the bracha before you even separate it, so now you're sort of two steps removed from the, meaning you have to separate it between, after you make the bracha, then you're going to be separating it, then you're going to be doing the mitzvah of saying Harei Zuchala. Usually we try not to make any hefsek, we try not to do anything else between the bracha and the mitzvah. So that's why, again, barring a minhag otherwise, it would seem to be that the best way to do it is to first take the piece off, then you make the bracha, which is right before you're saying Harei Zuchala, which again is really what the crux of the mitzvah is. Now, I brought in for today the Beis Yaakov cookbook. This is the first cookbook that I was given as a gift. I was given it as a gift yesterday by my mother-in-law.
Which is that a hint?
It's printed by Chicago. There's all history of the Beis Yaakov on the front. They actually, we didn't try it yet. Again, I got it yesterday. They have Rebbetzin Kanievsky, Allah Shalom's challah recipe in the front cover in her own handwriting. It is a good cookbook. So the reason that it was given,
it's a Hamish cookbook.
So the reason, the reason I brought it, there's a fascinating, almost 30-page section of halachic guidelines in the back, and it's put together by Rabbi Daniel Neustadt, who's the head of the Vod in Detroit. He's a well-known posik, and he deals with a wide variety of issues that come up in the kitchen and a lot of Shabbos stuff. But he does have some things on separating challah, and I did notice this morning, and I'm flipping through it, that he does say not the way that I said, so there's somebody definitely to rely on. I discussed it with their chef. I know their chef agrees with the way I said it, so I'm still comfortable with what I said. But he does say, immediately before the separation of the designated piece, this is what he says, and I'm sorry, make sure I don't want to quote him wrong. He says, the designated piece of dough should be held with the right hand immediately before the separation of the designated piece, with no talking in between, the blessing should be recited. After the separation, then you declare Harei Zuchala. So I guess what he's saying is that you stick your hand into the dough, and you sort of have it in your hand, before you actually pull it out. Then you would say the bracha. I guess he's trying to deal with the same issue that I was trying to deal with. I just said
just doing it in between.
Right. He wants them to be closer together. Right. So I think either way is fine.
Basically, what he's saying is, as you're pulling, you say the bracha.
Or you probably shouldn't be doing separate. Anything while you're saying it. While it's in your hand, ready to be pulled, ready to be removed. That's when you would say the bracha. Right. Then after you, but again, everybody's agreeing that after you take it off, that's when you say Harei Zuchala, which again is the main part of the mitzvah. For some reason you forgot the bracha and you said Harei Zuchala, so you can't go back and make the bracha again because the mitzvah is done. The bracha is a preparation.
So there's no
for the mitzvah, I think. Well, the reason that, okay, you know what? One more reason I'm saying that, again, I'm not here to endorse or to insult any cookbooks, but there is another very popular cookbook that says, to separate the piece of challah, say Harei Zuchallah, and then make the bracha. She wrote that in her first cookbook. In the subsequent ones that were published by Art Scroll, she does not give those instructions anymore, and I think because it's wrong. I'm not sure what the source is for it. I couldn't find any, but it seems to be incorrect. So once you say Harei Zuchal, the mitzvah is over. How can you say a bracha anymore? So again, I flipped through several cookbooks, but in the very popular first cookbook she put out, it does say to separate. Separate the piece, say Harei Zuchala, and then make the bracha. And I don't think that's correct. And in the subsequent Art Scroll ones, it says differently. And so again, either way, the bracha should be said, certainly be said before the Harei Zuchala. The only question being, do you actually take off the piece before the bracha or not? Again, if you don't have a minhag either way, then it seems to be that it's...
Do you need to rip it or cutting?
You have to use your hand? I don't think you have to use your hand. Cut it like taking a fork and a knife?
No, but you take a knife and slice it off.
I guess you could do that. I don't see why not. Neater. You know, that might actually help for something else. No, because I said there is a, but you should hold the piece in your, you have to pick up the piece afterwards. You should be holding the piece in your hand when you're saying Harei Zuchal,
right?
And making the bracha.
Yeah. Is it true?
Or not for making the bracha, if you're going to be doing it afterwards.
If you don't follow these halachos right, the punishment is death, like in childbirth, or that
there's
No, it means
no, wait.
That's what I heard. Like, if you don't follow the rules properly.
Not following the rules properly. If you're not mafer shkala, if you don't take it at all, so then it's probably not a good thing. But
is it connected to childbirth? What's
yeah. On three things the Mishnah says, women are in danger and could die during childbirth. It says Asheinan Zihiros, if they're not careful, Benida, Bechala, and Hadlaka Tanya, lighting Shabbos candles, separating Chala and the Halachos of Taras HaMishpacha. But I don't think that means all these details. Again, all these details are the way it should be done, and one should be careful. I think it means in taking challah. Meaning the basic mitzvah is separating it. And we said at the opening also, the mitzvah min haTorah doesn't even apply in chutzlaretz. Even nowadays, it's only the Rabbanan. It's never going to be min haTorah in chutzlaretz. When the majority of the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, then it's going to be min haTorah there. Right now, it's only the Rabbanan in Eretz Yisrael also. It's certainly something you should be careful about, but I don't think you should walk around being too scared. It should be done the right way. But there is a potential issue, which is this. If you are taking it off in your hand, and you're saying Harizu Chala when it's in your hand, so somebody pointed out, again, as we're going to mention shortly, the piece of Chala basically has to be treated like we would treat tray food afterwards. Meaning it's something which can't be eaten, and therefore we have to make sure it doesn't mix or touch any of our other food. Right? We're going to end up burning it, which we'll talk about soon. The reason that we're burning it is because there's nothing to do with it. We have to dispose of it properly. Again, it's the opposite of the trade food in that it's the Kedusha which is in it. It's the holiness which prevents us from being able to eat it. But we have to keep it separate from everything else. So if you say Harezu Chala and you're holding this piece of dough in your hand, and now you take the piece of dough out of your hand and you stick it into a piece of silver foil or something. So what happens to the dough that's, again, dough is usually sticky, I think. What happens to the dough that's left on your hand? If that dough is challah dough, and then you stick your hand right back into the thing, so do you have a problem or not? So I'm not sure. It seems to be something which the minhag seems to not be so concerned about. I'm not sure why. I would venture to say maybe that we assume that that's not really, you didn't have in mind a little bit left in your hand or something like that. But it could be a better way to do it. Is if you put a piece of foil in your hand and then reach in and take it off with the foil in your hand, then you don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Because then everything which is on the foil is going to be thrown out and your hand stays clean. I guess somebody suggested you should wear a glove and throw the glove out afterwards. That far, I don't know if you have to go that far. If one wants to, fine. It can be zeros. But I don't know if you have to be that concerned. But it's an interesting point. Okay, so what do we now do with our piece of our separated piece of challah? So we said Tarezu challah has a certain kedusha to it. We can't just do what we want with it. We certainly can't eat it. So we need to be very careful with it. Now, preferably, what we're supposed to do with challah, which is tameh, which is basically our challahs, because everybody is basically tameh. You have flour and water mixed together, and then water gives something the ability to become tameh. So it needs to be burnt in the fire until it's really burnt. Problem is where do you burn this piece of challah? If you take the piece of challah without any foil and stick it on your oven rack and burn on your oven rack is now treif, or whatever, the equivalent of treif. It's not, you can't use it with your other food. You have something which you can't eat now absorbed into your oven rack. So that's certainly not a good option. So, the better things seem to be to cover it. If you cover it in foil, then it's not touching the oven rack. Now, some people, again, to get it to burn well, which you want it to do, if you cover it all the way, it doesn't burn well. So, people want to leave it open. The problem with leaving it open is the same way we won't cook meat and milk together in the oven at the same time. So, is it okay to cook to bake our challahs in the oven together with this piece, which is basically treif, simultaneously in the same oven, which would be the most convenient way to do it. The oven's on anyway, and you can just forget about this piece and leave it in the corner. So it seems to me that one should not do that. If you do, it doesn't treif up anything, as long as it hasn't touched anything. The steam, we assume, of bread isn't so much. But again, l'chatchila, one shouldn't do that. So what options remain? So One option is to take it and stick it in the toaster oven or something else where it will heat up enough. It's not being used right now for anything else. Again, making sure it doesn't touch anything, and hope that that's going to burn it through. Yeah, so he suggests here, which again, it's not a halakha, but he does point out it would make sense that if you're going to be burning it in the oven fully wrapped in foil, you have to punch it down first and try to make it as flat as possible inside the silver foil, because then it's going to burn much more quickly. It's always the middle that's hardest to burn. So it seems like that's a very good idea. I hadn't thought about that beforehand. That's what the cookbook is here for. So that would work as well. Another alternative is to take the piece of foil and stick it with the foil on top of the burner. Put the fire on the burner, just stick it on. It will burn very, very quickly. Smoke alarm might go off, but it will burn very quickly. So all those are good possibilities. Some people are under the impression that you can double wrap it and throw it out. It would seem to be that that's only, you know, if you're somewhere where you can't get a fire or something, meaning you have no other option. So then you can dispose of it that way. But the halacha says that it's supposed to be burned, so you should certainly try to burn it. After it's burnt, you don't have to treat it with any, you know, sort of respect anymore. It's considered to be like ashes. You don't, I saw somebody write, and I have no idea why, that you should put it in a waterproof container before you threw it out so that it doesn't get wet. I don't know. It's garbage. The point of it is to burn it, to turn it into garbage. So that once it's garbage, you can throw it in the garbage. So that's, again, what to do with this. But, if you're going to be doing any of these things, the only thing you need to be careful about is sticking a fork into it to take it out. If you stick a fork into it in order to take it out, then you need to designate that fork as that you're going to be using for challah, because the fork now becomes the equivalent of treif. Again, because this piece is hot, it's something that we can't eat. So the same way, if you take your piece of fork and stick it into a piece of non-kosher meat, so the fork becomes unusable. So the same thing would be true as well. If you wanted to get it out of the oven, you're going to stick a fork into it or leave a fork in it while it's burning on the oven in order to be able to, let's say on top of the burner, you leave it with a spoon, fork, something in it to pull it out quickly. That would be a problem for your fork or your spoon.
Why does it not transfer the treif to your toaster oven if it transfers it to the fork and to your hands?
No, it would.
In tin foil, you can't use a toaster oven anywhere. Toaster ovens are things that absorb, typically.
Right.
Tarfas.
Right. Again, if it's not touching anything, then basically we assume the from the letter of the law basically is that bread doesn't really produce any steam. Halachic, at least halachic steam. So that if you are baking that in your toaster, so the foil prevents it from touching the bottom. And even whatever air, whatever steam comes out, that's not considered to be halakhically significant. Things that are more liquid or more fatty, that produces a steam, and that would be a problem to cook openly in the oven. That's part of the, you know, using the same oven from Fleishik and Milchik's potential problem. And if you want to cook a very liquidy Milchik thing in your Fleishik oven, so then there's going to be a lot of steam, and then maybe the steam draws the, you know, goes into the walls and comes back out, and everything gets mixed together. But if you have something that's not actually touching and it's not producing steam, then it's not going to be a problem. The only reason not to do it at the same time is because we assume that when you cook things at the same time, they give off an aroma, and the aroma can transfer from one food to another while it's cooking. Once the cooking is over, the aroma is finished. So that's why I wouldn't put it together with the regular challahs at the same time. But afterwards, you could even cook it in your regular oven. That's what to do with the piece of challah. Now, what if I make a mistake? I separated my piece of challah, and then I was cleaning up and whatever, and I threw out the piece of challah. So if one accidentally discarded, it's not a problem. Again, it's two separate obligations. One obligation is to separate the challah. That relates to our ability to be able to eat the challah. There's a second obligation that once my challah is separated, I'm supposed to treat that piece in a certain way, and I'm supposed to burn it. So if I don't have the opportunity to burn it anymore because it's been discarded in some way, so I lose out on that mitzvah, on the way I'm supposed to treat the challah, but that has nothing to do with my ability to be able to eat that which I'm baking, because again, I separated the challah, which is, again, two separate obligations. When I separate the challah, that creates for me now an obligation of what I have to do with that piece, that I have to burn that piece. So if I lose out on the opportunity to burn the beets, it doesn't affect the fact that I at least had separated what I'm supposed to separate. What if I forgot to be mafrish challah until after the baking? I didn't take it off when it was dough, and now my challah is in the middle of baking, and suddenly realized that I didn't take off challah. So the halacha is that you're allowed to take off challah even from fully baked goods. So you can take it off even afterwards. And again, that was what we mentioned beforehand, so that even if it's Friday night, and you realize that, you again, if it's Friday night in Chutz La'aretz, it's where you're allowed to eat from the food before the challah is taken, as long as you take it afterwards, so then you can't take the challah on Shabbos, but you can separate the piece, leave it on the side till after Shabbos, eat your challahs, and then declare that piece as challah after Shabbos, and it's going to be okay, because you can take challah even after the items are baked. Now, what happens in the following case? What happens if the piece of challah gets mixed back in with the dough? Doesn't sound so likely, but I was walking back from shul one Thursday after Marv, and my wife was hanging out the door with a phone, you know, somebody has a question, and that her dough had somehow risen near the piece of the challah that she had separated, and it swallowed it up, and now everything was all mixed together. So what do you do at that point? So they assumed that you could probably just want to just take off another piece and everything will be okay. So at the time I said, I know that that's not correct. I'm not sure what the halacha is, but we'll figure it out. So after looking around a little bit, the halacha is like this. If you assume that right now what we have, this piece of challah is basically like non-kosher food being mixed into your dough, but you can't tell where it is anymore, so you have a very serious problem. So normally when it comes to non-kosher food, it's mixed in, so we say that you need shishim. You need 60 times the amount of kosher food to the piece of non-kosher food. However, here, because we're dealing with something which is like chuma and has a certain kedusha to it, the halacha is you need 100 times, which is a lot. Oh, I asked her if she had 100 times, and she said she doesn't think she has 100 times the piece of challah. So then what do you do? So it seems a little bit strange that the halacha is that you would do hataras nedarim. Mm-hmm. You would say that you need to get the three people together, and you would say, had I known that the piece of challah was going to be mixed in, would you have made this piece of challah into challah? And she would say no, and then we undo the challah. Now what on earth does hataras nedarim have to do with challah? So if you kind of take a step back and think about it, they're actually very similar in that they are isurim or halachos that are created through speech. When I take a neder, when I take a vow, I've created that, you know, this cookbook, if somebody takes a neder, I'm not going to use this cookbook. So this new prohibition relating to this cookbook is something which I created. It didn't exist. The cookbook in a vacuum is fine. I created it. So since I created it, so the Torah puts in place a system where I can undo what I said. And the same thing is true here also. What turned this piece into challah? It wasn't that it grew as challah. It was my declaration, harezu challah. When I declare that this piece is challah, that's what created it into challah. So since I created it with my speech, so that the similar halacha applies. And ataras adarm can be done. The challah would then be nullified it would be non-existent, it would be revoked, it would be undone inside the mixture, and then you could take a new piece of challah out and start again from scratch. So again, it shouldn't happen too often, but if it does, it's probably a little known halacha. The more difficult question is how much flour needs to be used before the obligation to take challah kicks in. So the halacha is that if one bakes using the volume 43 1/5 eggs of flour, then you have to take off challah with a bracha. So it sounds fairly straightforward, but trying to figure out what exactly 43 1/5 eggs volumes of challah is not so simple. So there's a very wide range of opinions in terms of the poskim, in terms of trying to translate this volume into practical, nowadays, contemporary measurements. So according to some opinions, one becomes obligated when the dough contains more than 2 2/3 pounds of flour. Which again is not a lot if you're baking bread. It's still going to be a lot if you're making cake or cookies or something like that. But it's much less than the others, which again, the other extreme, which I think most assume, is that until about 5 pounds, you don't take with a bracha. The problem is that a lot of cookbooks and put everything in terms of cups, which theoretically should be good, because again, the 43 and a fifth egg volume is a measurement of volume, and 2 2/3 pounds or 5 pounds is a measurement of weight, and weight and volume aren't the same thing. So cups are also in the kitchen, the way we measure cups, is not a measurement of weight, it's a measurement of volume. You could have two ingredients that weigh, you know, that fill up the same cup, that weigh completely different amounts. So we would have thought that it's more precise to use the measurement of a volume and do it in terms of cups. The problem is that there are many factors that can affect how much flour is in a cup of flour. How much flour fits into the cup, meaning how many cups can you get out of a pound of flour? There's a range, I think it goes between a little more than 4 cups. Is that right? To a little bit, I wrote it down somewhere. To a little bit more than 5 cups. Which becomes, right, they're basically, I'm sorry, here it says, basically I wrote it down between 3.5 and 4 cups of flour per pound. And it depends on how much it's been sifted, and it depends on the humidity, depends on a lot of different factors. So that's why the post can put in terms of weight, because the weight always remains the same. So if we can give a shear in terms of weight, if we can say exactly how much weight you need, so then it can actually be more precise. The problem is that the recipes aren't always given in terms of weight, they're often given in terms of cups. So then we have to sort of convert back to volume, which becomes a lot more difficult. So even in a 5 pound bag of flour, do the math, it's approximately 17 and a half cups of flour in a 5 pound bag of flour. Others say that there are 19, others say there are 16. Which again relates to this point of, it just differs. And then it's true. The truth is that a cup of flour in the United States has 20% less flour than in other countries. Yeah, I think it has to do with the old metric system thing, that we're on our own measurements. If you go to England and you have a cup of flour, there's 20% more flour in their cup than in our cup. So cups are really imprecise for our purposes, which is why the poskim put it in terms of weight. Generally speaking, the minhag seems to be that, again, putting all the opinions together, that if you're going to be baking using more than three pounds of flour, then you should take off challah without a bracha. And once you get to 5 pounds, then you would take off challah with the bracha. It was pointed out to me that one of the recipes in one of the popular cookbooks has the recipe is to use a 5 pound bag of flour and to take 2 cups out.
No, I was going to do this. So
that's what that. I think it's, for our purposes, I think it's close enough, and I think you can still make a bracha if you take the 2 cups out. But the first time around when we gave the shear, a few of the women pointed out that they use that recipe and they keep in the 2 cups of flour, and it comes out just fine. So you get more challah for your more. Okay, works. That's what they've been told. But the truth is that, I think this is my only chumrah for the night, but I think it makes more sense in terms of, again, the reason that we say to take challah without a bracha at 3 pounds is because we're concerned that maybe the opinions that say that it's even less are the ones that are correct. But if we're being concerned with those, then I think we also need to be it makes more sense to be concerned in terms of cups than in terms of pounds, because there'll be times when you're using less cups than are, like, quote-unquote, officially in 3 pounds of flour. But since you can sometimes have more in a cup than otherwise, then I think, to me, it makes more sense to be nervous in terms of cups than in terms of pounds. So I think that it makes more sense from 8.5 cups, which is between 2.5 pounds and 3 pounds, to already take off challah without a bracha. And only once you get to the 5 pounds that they go off with the bracha. So it sounds strange that one's in cups and one's in pounds, but since the cups are more imprecise, then I think in terms of being careful to just take off, again, we're talking about a little piece, it's not such a big deal to take off the piece, then it would be better to take it off once you get to 8.5 cups and not make a bracha until you get to 5 pounds.
Are you not getting a mitzvah if you don't do the bracha?
No, you always get the mitzvah even if you don't say no.
Right. You ideally do, you know.
It's better to, again, you know for sure that you're obligated in the mitzvah, so we say to make the bracha. But whether you make a bracha or not doesn't affect whether you've been mekayin in the mitzvah. So that's why, misafek, since there's a doubt, we don't want to say a bracha, because if we're wrong about the bracha, so then we're in trouble, because we're saying Hashem's name for no reason. But if we take it off, and it's a mitzvah, we're good, and if not, so we wasted, you know, this little piece of challah. It's not the end of the world. So what about baking them all at one time? Now that we have our full 5 pounds, according to everybody, we need to take off challah with the bracha. We need it together and ready to take off the challah. But I make my challos out of it. I'm not planning on baking it all right now. I want to take dough and put the dough in the freezer. And then, it's already braided, it's ready to go. And then, Erev Shabbos, I can stick it in the oven and have fresh challah for Shabbos. It's potentially a problem. It's a big question in the poskim, if once you've divided up the dough, do we now view it as two doughs or not? And if now the two doughs don't have, if each dough alone does not have the right amount, so then, I would say in such a situation, you should still take off the challah, but you shouldn't make a bracha anymore, because it could be that, it doesn't talk about if you bake them all at the same time, and you're going to freeze it once it's baked, for sure that's fine. We're talking about baking it, freezing it as dough.
I don't understand the question.
The question is when we say, again, we're making this big dough. There's a Mishnah that says that if you make the dough with the intention of dividing it up, then you're not obligated in challah, because we view what's divided up as separate challahs. So for instance, if let's say you have a teacher in a school, and she makes a big dough, and every child is going to be given his or her own piece of dough to braid a challah, make the challah, and that child is very much wants to take home their specific challah that they made, then you would not make a bracha on such a case. Because each, you've now subdivided the dough into 20 little doughs, and each dough is no longer obligated.
Well, you also, when you do it at home, you subdivide it into 6 or 7
but
or 8.
But if you bake it all.
Right.
The baking is the important thing, not the dividing.
So that's what the machlok is. The Mishnah says that the problem is dividing. And the question is, so how does that realize itself? You know, it's hard to eat 5 pounds of challah, right, at one time.
When you're grating it, you're dividing it into separate.
Right. So all poskim agree that if you've just divided it up for the purpose of baking it, so that's still considered to be one session, we'll call it, and it's considered to, and it all maintains its relationship to each other, and it's considered to be your one dough that you made a lot of challahs out of. But if you would be, let's say you invite a few friends over and you're going to have a challah baking party, and amongst the 5 people, you're each going to take 1 pound worth of the dough, bake your challahs and take your challahs home with you for Shabbos, so then you've subdivided into, now it's 5 different people's doughs. You're right, it came together initially as dough. So again, since we're concerned that maybe it's still considered to be one dough, we would still say to take off the challah, but we wouldn't make a bracha anymore, because there are many poskim that would say you're no longer obligated in challah.
So
the question is what the is at what point is it too, even for one person, is it divided up too much that it's considered to be separate dough? So there are many poskim that assume that that baking it together is really what makes this dough into one dough. You're right, you have to knead it together, but the baking is what makes this into, you know, it concretizes the relationship between the different challahs. Right. So then once you've divided it up and you're going to freeze it, so again, you should definitely still take challah, but I'd be hesitant about making a bracha on such a case.
So if you use 5 pounds, divide it up, and use
if you're
it
for
a week, don't make a bracha on it?
Are you baking?
If you're baking them all the same.
No, you're freezing raw, and you're taking two or three out every week until you use it up.
There are many posts that would say you should not make a bracha. You should not make a bracha in such a case.
Even if it is 5 pounds. And
even if it's 5 pounds.
You're not dividing it up right. In the other houses.
Right. Right. Because they, once it's not being baked together, it's considered to be a, this week's dough and next week's dough. As opposed to being this week's challah and next week's challah. If I bake it all at once, so then it was all one dough. But the challahs are for multiple weeks. Again, there are those who will disagree, but there are many, again, look what the cookbook says. The cookbook has this case. I didn't have a chance to look at this. It tastes fresh if you reheat it. I think so.
That's what I do.
Use those and I press together.
I think the last time I made challah was in Beis Yaakov. That was a
don't tell you. I
believe what's called support the baker. Yeah. Otherwise, he'll go on unemployment.
I don't think he has it. Okay, he has a lot of things here. I don't see this. I'm quickly looking right now.
Oh, it's a lot.
My friends do is they prepare it and then they put into different aluminum foil pans. And they freeze it raw.
That's what the rabbi is saying. Then you can't make the bracha.
No, you shouldn't make a bracha.
So they make the bracha for the peat. Wait a second. So
then it makes it less than 5 pounds, and then you can't make the bracha.
Right.
So the challah or the two challahs that they're using for that Shabbos, they don't. And the baking, they don't make the bracha. Is that what
you shouldn't you're make the bracha.
You
should separate.
You make the challah. I make the challah bracha. This way I do.
When it's dough.
Yes, when it's dough. I cut off my portion.
Right.
Say the bracha. Throw it into the toaster oven, and while it's burning in the toaster oven, I'm dividing up and...
Right, the question is, it depends if you know, right? If you've done it, and then you decide I'm going to freeze it as dough, so it's fine, you weren't planning on that at
I
the time.
I said it as challah, like braided and ready.
Right. But again, if you assume like this, so even though you took the challah before, and since you as long as you know what you're going to do with it, then we would decide based on what you're going to do with it. So again, even though you didn't actually separate it into separate challahs that are going to be frozen as dough yet... When you're taking the piece of challah, if you know that's what you're planning on doing, then you right probably shouldn't make a bracha.
So you have to burn the challah piece before you put the challah in the oven, or what?
No, burn whenever you want. There are some people that have the minhag. I don't recommend it because it can potentially cause trouble of freezing the piece of challah and throwing it in with the chametz during the chametz.
What did I just say?
But if it ends up.
Being eaten.
You're right. If it ends up that somehow this stuff ends up being mixed in or something, you have the potential problem in your freezer. Again, there are those that do it. I don't think it's halachic. It could be it's better. It's reason makdim mitzvos. Maybe it's better to do it right away. But it could be a potential a problem waiting to happen. It might be better not to do it. But again, that's not a really halachic concern. Now, what about the opposite case of what we just had? What if you're making your dough in your bread machine, and your bread machine can only hold 2.5 pounds of 2.5 pounds of flour? You're going to immediately
make another
one because you want the full amount. Can you make a bracha or not? Is there a way of making those doughs come together? So now there are ways to bring them together. You need to basically create one dough out of these separate doughs. Now, if you're talking about a case where you have two separate doughs and each one has the requisite amount, so then as long as they're in close proximity to each other, you could take from one and it works for everything. I mean, if you make 10 pounds of, if your bread machine can hold 5 pounds, then you're going to make 5 pounds, then immediately do another 5 pounds. So then you can, doesn't matter which the doughs, as long as the doughs are all around, you can take from one and it will cover the entire 10 pounds. But what if you don't have this year? What if you only have 2.5 pounds in each one and you want to be able to make the bracha? How can you divide it together? So there are several ways that you can take two separate doughs and combine them into one. So one is to combine the doughs physically. Take them and stick them together. As long as they're stuck together to the point that if you pull off one of the doughs, part of the other dough would come along with it. It's, you know, it's that sticky, and it's considered to be one dough. Even if it's somewhat recognizable, again, this is all assuming that it's the same recipe. The different recipes, it's not might not work. Only if the two things taste good together. But if you know, you can't mix your chocolate cake together with your, well, whatever, different pet peeve of mine for a different time. But your chocolate cake together with your challah. Challah and chocolate cake are two different things. Chocolate's dessert, challah is challah. But,
what do you do with the marshmallows, challahs?
Yeah. Marshmallow challahs, oh, you make a barman of those.
Yeah.
For a different time. But that's one possibility. The other one is that if you put them all into one kli, into one vessel, so then the vessel itself combines the different doughs. So the easiest way of doing that is if you put the two doughs on the table, and you could even have braided them into challahs already. That doesn't matter because now you're not physically connecting them. And you have a tablecloth under it, and you lift up the, or a towel under it, and you lift up the edges and sort of like, you know, make it look like a Little Red Riding Hood kind of, you know, basket that goes on a pole. You don't have to actually physically look it up, but pick it up, but as long as you've sort of put them together like that, so now they're considered to be in one vessel, that combines them into one dough, and then you can take off challah and even make a bracha. Again, it's the opposite case of what we had before. Before we had, you had enough and then you subdivided it and you may lose out on your bracha. Here you're taking two different doughs and by putting them together, you can actually create a situation in which you are allowed to make a bracha.
You could just put it in a bowl like that also. You don't
have right, correct. It just depends how, but like, if for instance you wanted to start braiding, braiding the first group of challahs while the second one's getting ready, so then if you have the braided challahs there and then you put the other dough there and you lift it up together, and you don't want it to be touching because you don't want it to look funny or something anymore, so then that would still work. There's a potential problem that exists. I don't want to get bogged down by this because if you bake something, let's say you bake challahs and you're using 2 pounds 2 pounds of flour. You're making a few challah rolls and you're going to bake them, and so you don't take off challah and you stick them in a foil pan inside a Ziploc bag inside your freezer, and then you bake the exact same recipe the next week using 3 pounds of flour, and you bake them and you do the exact same thing and you throw it into the same container in your freezer, that now combines in the same way, even though they were baked already and they were baked on completely different days, that combines, again, as long as it's the same baked goods, that combines them, and now you have a chiyuv to take off challah from that combination of already baked challahs. I don't think it comes up very often. Because even if you have cookies or something like that, you keep throwing them into a cookie jar, you need an awful lot of flour, an awful lot of cookies to get to the requisite amount of flour to have to take off challah. Theoretically, it could exist if you're baking a ton, maybe for shalach manos or something like that, a lot of these little cakes, and you're not baking them all at the same time, and it's not going to be the right amount of flour, but if you end up throwing them all into one big box, and then you're going to, you know, as people come to the door, give them from the box, theoretically, you might have created a situation in which you have to take challah, even though they were baked on at completely different times. So, something to keep in mind. Who can and should take challah? So there's a special mitzvah, the Shulchan Aruch says, for women to take challah. Somehow it fixes the chait of chava, I don't know exactly how, but it's a mitzvah which has been given to women, and if your husband wants to do it, and you want to do it, you have the right to tell him, it's my mitzvah, you can't do it, even though maybe he earn the money to pay for it. Doesn't matter. It's not his mitzvah. Women have kedima. But what's important to keep in mind is that children can't do it. So they're not a bar bas mitzvah. So they can't fulfill the mitzvah yet. So they can watch and they can learn, but they can't actually. It's a problem which comes up with the tefillas kelim also. And oftentimes we bring the kids with us to do tefillas kelim. They can't actually do the dunking. They can't do the mitzvah.
It's on the sign.
It's on the sign.
It is on the sign.
Yeah, that's
on the sign. They can't do the dunking. They can't do the bracha either.
Either.
Let's say you say the bracha and then you take the dunking.
No.
So then it's counted like you didn't type all that thing.
It depends how old the child is.
8, 9, yeah.
8, 9.
Oh boy.
We can talk about it later.
That's new.
The sign is new, or the halacha is new?
As new as the mitzvah is new. Right. That wasn't there by the old sign.
That could be. I don't remember. I think it's just people don't realize it.
Right.
The same thing is true. A non-Jew, if you have somebody helping you in the kitchen,
any of those things,
right? But if it's a mitzvah, they can't. They're not obligated in the mitzvah yet. So we try to get them to participate in things that they can learn. If you have somebody who's very close to bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, so then sometimes we sort of give them a little bit of a head start, but usually not more than a year or so before.
They can do the fishing gear from the bottom of the mitzvah.
Send them in. Assume if you've got somebody of a non-Jew helping you in the kitchen, or she also can't take challah.
That's different than your kid.
No, I'm just saying it's just something which comes up. I'm not comparing the two. No.
Interesting.
I agree. It's very different. It's good to have the children out to help you. I don't think you have any. You don't have to teach the non-Jew help how to be taking off challah. Your children should be learning that there is that such a mitzvah exists. Just they're not obligated yet. And the same thing is true when it comes to tefillas kelim. Also, we have a lot of before our first Pesach, we had a ton of things to tefillah in the mikvah. So my wife took our cleaning help together with her to the mikvah, and she was drying and putting the things away. And she offered several times to, she's like, "Oh, why don't I help you dip the things?" And she's like, no, it's okay, I'll do it. But that's, again, it's not comparing the two. It's only comparable in that they're both not obligated in the mitzvah. And somebody who's not obligated can't perform the mitzvah. What if you buy some sort of frozen pizza dough, something like that, you bought it as dough? So the halakha is you're only obligated in hafrashas challah if the thing was needed and at the stage of becoming dough, it was owned by a Jew. So for some reason, so either maybe they took off the dough already, although it might be a halakhic problem if they took off the challah already, because as we said, if you divide it as dough and sell it, and you're selling it as dough, it's the same. It's worse probably than putting the challahs in your freezer as dough. So I think again, if it has a hafshir, don't worry about it. It should say if you have to. But either way, you're not going to have to take off challah, because as long as it wasn't needed when it was owned by a Jew, then even if it was the right amount, it can't become obligated later. What? Why is that?
Yeah, I'm confused.
If you, let's say you buy
pizza dough. Let's say I buy pizza dough from ShopRite.
Right. Yeah.
So if you buy,
and it has a half shell, huh?
Yeah.
Wherever you buy pizza dough from, I'll say I don't know who. Assuming that the pizza dough is from not from a non-Jewish company, and it's. Again, it has a hechsher.
Yeah.
It's supervised.
Yeah.
So it's kosher.
Okay.
But in terms of the obligation to take challah, if at the point at which the dough was needed and became dough, it was owned by a non-Jew, then no matter what you do to it later, even though you're baking it in your house, it can't become obligated in challah. Because the obligation kicks in at the point of needing. That's what I'm saying. So you shouldn't worry.
I'll
be fine. Many times it says challah taken.
When buying just dough?
No, on packages.
Right, because there you have to, right? Because bakeries produce a ton of baked goods. So they're for sure using the required amount. If you have a bakery that's making cookies for the whole day,
well,
they use more than 5 pounds.
Something is, like you're saying, going back to ShopRite, you're buying something right from the freezer.
Yeah, and it already was.
Right.
Unless it's a Jewish, like one of
those. Okay, just to finish up with a few other, a few quick things. So what if you're given a gift or you're a guest and you're not sure if the person took challah or not? So the halacha is, again, as we said, you can take off challah if something is baked. So you can take off a little piece. If it's on Shabbos, again, you're not allowed to declare it as challah on Shabbos. You have to be a little bit more careful. Maybe, stick it in your pocket and take it home with you and declare challah afterwards. You don't need to make a bracha because you don't know. So you can very discreetly, this comes up more in Eretz Yisrael when you have all the halachos of chumos and maestros, and oftentimes you end up with people that there's legitimate concern having taken these things. There are ways of very discreetly pushing things aside your plate and being mafresh, and the same thing would be true here as well. And you might not even have to say harizu chalas, you don't have to do it in your head, so you don't have to do anything which would potentially embarrass anybody, but you can get yourself out of the situation. What if you can't remember if you took challah or not?
Just do it again.
Simply can't remember. So you could do it again, but if you are in the custom, you always bake challah and you always take off challah, then we can, the same way like when it comes to like Yalav Yavo and things, or Yalav Yavo is a bad example, like Mashiv Ruach, after 30 days pass and you're accustomed to saying it, so we assume that you said it, so you can even assume that you say it here. So if you could take it off, you can take it off again, but definitely don't make a bracha, because again, chances are that you probably did it. Just to finish up one last thing, there's this skula that goes around That's something to do with 40 women separating challah on Friday.
Even Thursday night.
Thursday night.
Anytime.
It's always on Teenage Shoes.
So I get it. I was convinced to realize, somebody called me, I'm sorry, it's a little overtime, if I have to go, it's fine. Somebody called me once, and it was in the summer, the rabbi was away, and she wanted to know if she could have in mind two people. There was somebody who was sick in Teaneck and somebody who was sick in Bergenfield, and there were two different groups trying to get together for 40 women. She wanted to know if she could do it for both or not. I don't know what to say, because I thought the whole thing comes from nowhere. So, but I had a feeling that it was going to affect a lot of people, because chances are one email is going to go out to the entire 40 group and get to the other one. So I didn't want to say anything. So I tried to beat around the bush a little bit. But I tried to look it up. I tried to find a source. I couldn't find any from more than 20 years ago. Then I found, from Rav Aviner, who was asked this question, is there a school for finding a match, healing, fertility, etc., 40 women separate chal together on a Friday? Answer, this is a new creation which has no source. I was very happy. I was convinced also it's a new creation which has no source. He says there's a level of holiness, and there's a level of holiness in every mitzvah, but there is no source for 40 women separating it together.
It's even worse. They're making up more and more things.
They're making more holiness.
I got an email from a group of people that I did not partake in, for the record. You take coins. It has to be a quarter or a dime, nothing else.
Yeah.
And you give the first coin and you say, this coin is in
quarter and
the memory
dime. It's only 35 cents. I thought maybe it was going to get to 40.
Somebody or something, like rabbis. Like they said, one of them was a
Mayor Balinese probably gets involved.
One was that. One was a Menachem Mendel. And one I don't remember. I deleted the email. And you have to say, this coin is in memory of this coin is a memory.
Right.
And if you don't say, then it doesn't count.
So somebody asked,
with the challah?
Yeah.
So last time somebody asked, was there anything bad about doing it?
Yes.
So I'm not sure. There might be. If you really think, what?
I don't
know. The point is like this. The question is it worse than davening or something else for the person? So the answer is maybe. Because davening for somebody is something which we have a source, and we know that Chazal tell us that, and we see from the Torah, that we can daven on behalf of somebody else. We can learn Torah for somebody else. But the fact that a mitzvah that I'm doing should be a zechus for somebody else, there's no connection between me and that person. Now, if the person is the person who taught you how to bake challah, and you only know the halachos of hafrashas challah because of that person, so then maybe doing hafrashas challah is... It connects to that person, because I wouldn't know how to do this without that person who taught me how to do it. But just to the fact that I'm doing a random mitzvah should connect to another person.
Well, why can't you just say, Hashem, in honor of this mitzvah that I'm doing, please let them have a refuah? At the basic level.
Why can't you just, at the time that you're doing it, if you feel like saying a tefillah, just say, Hashem, please be merapi this person. Please make this person a refuah shleima.
It's not the act.
But it has nothing inherently to do with the taking of challah.
Take my bonus points that I'm doing.
But how do we know that you have the right to do that? We don't know that you can do that.
Okay. You can't bargain with God. No, you can't.
We can bargain. I just don't know if we can give. If we can, you can. We can. So I think we should daven, and there are beautiful tefillos which accompany, and all those tefillos I think should be said. I don't know exactly what they say in them, but I'm sure they should be said. If it's anything like the Friday night tefillos, those are beautiful tefillos which are appropriate to be said. But to assume that my mitzvah is going to relate to another person, what connection is there between me and that person to say that this mitzvah should work for that person? I think the time would be better spent davening for that person. Tzedakah we know works, and Talmud Torah. But outside of those things, I don't know if we have a source that doing a mitzvah, again, unless that person taught me that mitzvah. If for some reason I'm specially connected to that person through this mitzvah, and I wouldn't know how to do this mitzvah without that person, so then for sure, if you do that mitzvah, every time you do that mitzvah, it's probably a zechus for that person. The same way, anybody who helps us do any mitzvot, it's because of the host of that person. But just to say that I'm doing this mitzvah, and because I'm doing this mitzvah, that should be a refuah. It's potentially dangerous.
Okay, so let me ask you a question then, on this topic, because I was going to ask you this question a little bit later on. A person is sick, right? The cough will be there in the hospital. And it's Sukkot's time. It's before Sukkot. And they always do Asher and Luluf, and they're incapacitated. I'm losing my voice. They're incapacitated. So you can't have them. Can you have them in your mind when you're doing
You can have them in your mind all you want. I don't know if it does anything. I don't see what that says. You could try to bring them a lulav and esrog, but I'm not sure what your mitzvah, what's doing your...
I mean, you can't transfer your mitzvah to somebody else.
No.
There's a famous story about the Gra, which seems to see that you can take the schar. Again, it's hard to know what to make of it. It's a story that, that there was a person who... They were trying to get the Nesrog for the Vilna Gaon, and the person refused to sell it. And he finally said, you know what, I'll sell to the Vilna Gaon if he gives me the schar for his mitzvah. His mitzvah taking... But even here, there's at least a relationship to the mitzvah. I'm giving him my lulav and esrog, but I want his schar of that mitzvah. So even that's even better. It's still better than our case, because at least it was, he facilitated the Vilna Gaon's being able to do the mitzvah.
You want people to learn for you.
That's what he said.
I said, learning tzedakah and tefillah, we have sources that we can do things that will merit somebody else. If it creates... Right, okay, fine.
You know, have somebody else in mind, just because you just know.
Right, but I think you just need to formulate... You have somebody else in mind, just formulate it as a tefillah.
Right.
Use the inspiration. If a person, you know, is in the mikvah, all these things are times of... If you feel the connection, so channel the energy.
Right.
But channel the energy through a tefillah. Channel the energy through... Or you know, this person I've always been impressed with how he or she, you know, is very careful about the way they talk. So in that person's in honor of that person, I'm gonna be careful about that. So that might be zuchus, because again, that person is inspiring you for that mitzvah. But just to say the fact that I'm doing a mitzvah relates to somebody who I don't know who they are, I have no connection to that person. They have no connection to the fact that I'm taking challah, other than the fact that they're because they're sick, that's why I'm doing challah this week.
No, but you keep them in mind.
See,
Can you keep them in mind?
With the tefillah. I think you should do it with the tefillah. With the tefillah. With the tefillah. Last time somebody asked, so does that mean that I should say no when I'm asked?
Yeah.
I know.
I'm just deleting you.
I don't know.
The 40?
I think if you're going to say, I don't know if you have to, somebody else said, well, should I tell them that they shouldn't be doing it? I said, listen, I don't know how far you have to go. But in terms of yourself, if you're going to participating, so make sure that when you're doing it, it's as the tefillah, whatever he's doing with the 40. Yeah, I would personally stay away from it.
The 40, you're ruining it for them. It's like
I don't know if you're ruining it for them. I don't know if there's anything to ruin. But it's an important thing to keep in mind. And people want to help, but I think if they use the energy of the connection that they're having to Hashem at that moment, and give tzedakah in honor of zechus to that person, which we know works, or daven for that person. Those are things that we know work. So that's great. But just to say that I'm taking a sal, I'm part of 40, and somehow that fact that I'm taking it as part of 40 is going to bring this person refuah shleima. There's no source for that. It seems to be more hocus pocus than Judaism. So it's maybe there's a source for it. I was very happy when I found Rav Aviner, who knows a lot more than me. Say unequivocally, it's a new creation that has no source. Which again, I've been thinking for a long time, but I was searching around trying to find one. But again, it is a beautiful mitzvah, and then the Shulchan Aruch more than in other places says that it is a special thing for women to be doing. It even says on Erev Shabbos is better, but that's because of the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. So I think if somebody does it earlier in the week, having in mind that it's the Kavod Shabbos, is probably fine too. Yeah, I think so. The point is, I think, to have in mind that it's being done on Kavod Shabbos. If you're not going to have you're going to have less Kavod Shabbos because you're not going to be able to do anything else for Shabbos because you're baking challah on Friday, then I think it undermines the point. The toppings was sheer number two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm hopefully, if this recording works, that we're going to put all three recordings together when I finish the Wednesday night. All these fillings and stuff like that present a very serious problem, helpless brachos. I'm actually probably going to be giving it again similarly. I'm going to talk about pizza and other things like that this Shabbos between Mincha and Ma'ariv on Shabbos afternoon, because it's been coming up a lot, people asking. But again, if you can't figure out whether your challah is a babka or a challah except based on the shape, that's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
I never really saw
this before.
I think Rabbi Pretensky already said you're not supposed to use it as blessing.
Save it for dessert.
Serve it part of the meal.
Serve it for dessert.
It's dessert.
Yeah, it is dessert.
Chocolate chips and
The way I said it, I think, last time, is that if somebody was coming from the outside, doesn't know anything about, you know, Shabbos or Challah, and sees this piece of bread / cake, if they would think that this is a dessert food versus something I would put my tuna sandwich on, then it probably tells us a little bit about what it really is. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we decided to become very creative with it is nice, but it's... Again, there are ways that you can turn things that are mezonos into hamotzi and in the context, which was what we talked about then, but it's not an easy thing. I only saw one of these, I was in one of the bakeries that makes these types of challahs last week. I saw for the first time a chocolate chip challah. I've never seen so many chocolate chips in one baked good in my entire life. Like, I don't think baklas have that many, have that much chocolate in it.
You got a good buy on it.
Did you discuss the amount that you're supposed to separate? I didn't.
Yeah, I mentioned at the beginning. You said it should be a minimal amount. Because, if we were actually giving it to the Kohanim, so then we would say we should give them. But since we're going to be burning it, so the minhag is, the Rama says, is to take off a kezias. So we assume a kezias is a little bit bigger, somewhere between the size of an olive and an egg.
Well,
okay. Saved you some dough. So
literally.
I think that covers most of the issues, and hopefully it was somewhat informative. Thank you.
Thank you.